Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and this is another episode of our opportunity to talk with legal nurse consultants about their roles, how they got started, and what has made them successful. I'm talking today with Valerie Lane, who has been a registered nurse for 23 years. She has specialties in surgery and corrections and is a legal nurse consultant certified and established Lane and Associates in the Central Valley of California. Valerie has experience as a full-time correctional nurse for the California State Prison System, and she established her reputation through hard work and perseverance. She's an expert in correctional nursing, and she was successful in assisting clients through her experience and knowledge of the prison system. And I think the expression, Valerie, is that you came out from behind the walls in 2010, and she got full-time employment as a legal nurse consultant for a major healthcare system, which has facilities in California, Nevada, and Arizona, where she is a member of the risk services team. She has that interesting background of doing some independent work, some correctional work, and now risk management work. And I believe that Valerie and I met at a conference for legal nurse consultants about the time that she left the correctional system. And Valerie has also presented a program for me through the Pat Iyer Group called Hospital-Acquired Infections, Whose Fault Are They? I've been talking with Valerie as we've been ready to get started and found out that she is working on an online course, an RN to BSN program, and has ambitions to continue on for her master's, so she's juggling going to school, family, and work. But let's take you back, Valerie, and get you to the point of when you first got started in legal nurse consulting. How did that happen?
Well, thank you for taking the time to interview me, first of all. I appreciate that. I became interested in legal nurse consulting right after I went out to work in the correctional system for the California State Prison, approximately in 2007. And I'm not sure whether I started seeing advertisements for the education available that we received through the mail, through flyers. Somehow my interest was piqued and I decided to get my certification through that program. I'm not sure if you want me to name that program. And just started from there. And opened up Lane and Associates, did the basic groundwork to establish my business, which was an education in itself, and began to market to attorneys in my spare time while I continued my full-time work in correctional nursing, and just kept pursuing that as an independent legal nurse consultant.
Then when you were doing independent legal nurse consulting, were you working specifically on correctional cases, or did you have a broader practice?
It was more broad. At that time, I was trying to break through and just trying to get in and talk to attorneys and convince them of what a legal nurse consultant could do for them. So it was mainly medical malpractice for the plaintiff's side. it was later on that I was able to work on correctional cases once I established my business, and then had done some work for previous attorneys, and actually was contacted through, I believe, my website for my correctional cases.
Okay. And then when you were working in correctional nursing, were you in a risk management position, or was it a clinical position?
Actually, I had worked in most of the positions in a prison. So to for a clear understanding, the California State Prison System is set up as they have clinics. There are yard clinics for the different yards, general population, enhanced outpatient, or of course the yards that are under a stricter security clearance, such as a protected housing unit, where maybe a more infamous inmate would be housed. And so there are opportunities out in the yard to work in those nursing clinics. And then my initial position, once I transitioned out of the OR there, which is actually how I went out to the prison system, they actually have an acute care hospital at Corcoran State Prison. And so I started in the OR there. We mainly did a lot of urology and liver biopsies. So it wasn't a full OR. And then I transitioned out to the yard to the CID clinic, which was a building where all the HIV-positive inmates were housed. And that eventually transitioned. All those patients or inmates were moved up north to have access to physicians at Stanford and UC San Francisco. And so then I actually took another position as the CAHIA coordinator, which is the involuntary medication program where inmates are medicated involuntarily due to danger to self, danger to others, or grave disability. And I actually would not write investigation reports, but make sure all the documentation was in order for the administrative hearings where a judge would come in and each side would have their, both plaintiff and defense would have their opportunity to speak, and then the administrative law judge would make a decision of whether that medication was to continue or not. And so that was very interesting, and actually because of my LNC certification, that qualified me for that job, and so, which was very autonomous. I ran the program as far as coordinating the doctors and security, and actually attending the administrative hearing, and so that was very interesting. And I did that for about a year. And so then I ended up going into supervisory capacity until this job became available that I'm in now.
Now, I mentioned before that you're in a risk services position. I've been a member of the American Society for Healthcare Risk Managers for quite a few years and attended the New Jersey chapters when I was living full-time in New Jersey. And what struck me about what I learned about risk managers is that I thought of risk managers as people who primarily investigated potential claims. But I've discovered that there's all other aspects associated with the job, and I wondered if you could share with the members of our audience, probably many of whom have not been in a risk management position, what are the other pieces of your role besides looking at potential claims?
Well, the way it's set up for the health system that I work for, I am actually a corporate employee, and I work closely with the risk managers. Mm-hmm. The risk managers mainly field complaints. They take care of the compliance and regulatory aspect, or in other words, reportable incidents or events to the state, sentinels event, things of that nature. And so what happens at our facilities is that we have a computer system where people enter incident reports, and then that goes to the risk manager, and they decide whether that event or incident needs to be reported or forwarded to me, and then I get the medical record, and I write up a report and do investigative work as far as interviewing staff, documentation, anything that might pertain to the claim, and then that, should the claim be asserted, then that goes to another individual, and they actually handle that legal aspect of it. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Sure, it does. Now, take us to the bedside, and let's talk about what happens when the risk manager gets a phone call. I know you've talked about how they reported up the system, but the majority of the people listening to the call are involved in a case after they've been notified that there's a claim. They might do a little bit of pre-suit investigation if they're working with an insurance company, but the majority of our people are brought in when there's a plaintiff attorney who gets involved or a defense attorney who's notified of a suit. What
right.
happens right at the bedside? There's an incident, and then how does the risk manager become involved at that point?
Okay, so I'm going to use my background in surgery. So, for example, a retained foreign body. So the patient obviously has a procedure. The counts are supposedly correct. The patient leaves the OR, which is the line, you know, once the patient leaves the OR with a retained foreign body, that's when it's got to be reported. At least here in California, I would like to say that that is more than likely the standard nationally. But so the risk manager is notified of the event through, it could be from medical staff, it could be from nursing staff. It just depends on how that information is communicated to them, and then they usually do what is called a root cause analysis. And so that's a process where they gather all of the witnesses involved, and they attempt to figure out what happened, and if there are processes that need to be changed, what the human factors were that were involved. And they actually go through that whole process with a fine-tooth comb. And so, but that is something that is that's internal documentation, so that is not available to everybody.
Mm-hmm. I know
that's usually what happens, and then the LNC comes in afterwards and does their own investigation, and then they go out and interview staff and also attempt to figure out, you know, what processes, what standard of care was not followed. And the thing about as an LNC, usually we're able to glean more information, which is what we're looking for, because not everything can be documented in the record, obviously, but there are other aspects, for example, body language or staff conflict that may not be readily noticeable at an internal process meeting. And so that's really where the LNC, excuse me, is valuable, because they come in as a third party, and interview is conducted one-on-one, and so they're usually a little bit more relaxed and are able to, you're able to develop a rapport with them and a trust factor. So if there are things that were not necessarily revealed before, then that is the opportunity to glean information additional information for that claim.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the risk manager, once they finish with that internal documentation, they monitor, they're the liaison, of course, between the public health department and the facility, and then they're the ones that actually go in and put the processes in place that maybe are not there to begin with or that should be changed. As an LNC, of course, I would also corroborate with the risk manager and bring to their attention information that I would be made aware of. So I know that they know that these processes are going on that are not within standard of care or that need to be improved or maybe revised.
So it sounds to me from what you're describing that there can be a number of internal changes that may result from an incident, and those are changes that a outside legal nurse consultant working with a plaintiff attorney, for example, or maybe even a defense attorney, would really not have any knowledge about what went on in the facility as a result of an incident. But sometimes when legal nurse consultants are reading depositions, they may get wind of a defendant who says, well, you know, that's not the way that we do it anymore. You know, we've changed our practice. And usually that's not germane to the lawsuit and can't be used as evidence of that person's guilt. I'm not phrasing this in the most eloquent way, but it's not significant to the lawsuit what changes the facility made afterwards. So there's a lot
Correct.
Of mystery in the minds of legal nurse consultants. Like, what did happen? Did they learn their lesson, they being the defendants? Could you give us a sense of what you've seen over the years in terms of changes that can result from litigation?
Well, it can be as simple as checking an oxygen tank volume
mm-hmm.
and processes that are changed because of an incident that happened with lack of volume in an oxygen tank. It could be going back to the OR, how with the process when staff goes on a break, whether they count at that time or what kind, you know, how involved the count is when somebody leaves the room, what is opened onto the back table that may not be accounted for, changing the whiteboard lineup of the items that are opened and placed on the field in order of items that are most used. It could really really be anything, and that is one thing as an LNC, when you see those changes that are made and actually assist in and recommend changes that are made, that is a good thing and makes you feel like you are affecting change.
Mm-hmm.
So other intricate or other, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head, but because usually in my experience, I don't always see the changes that happen due to investigation, but with feedback through your risk manager and good corroboration, at times I will be able to see that effect in change.
Mm-hmm. Have you had an aha moment in your career?
In my current position or just generally?
Just generally, like a revelation that really struck you about what you're doing or how the healthcare system works.
Yeah, actually I have. It's interesting where, and I'm not sure if this is what you're looking for, so please let me know. It's very surprising to me when I interview staff and there's a lack of critical thinking skills. And I think, well, I try and educate them on that. I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about. As far as legal nurse consulting and getting into the specialty, I love it when I go through a record and I'm able to point out, things that patterns or just the whole investigative process, and then especially when I have somebody else discuss the case with somebody else, for example, the risk manager, and they corroborate what I've found, because I of course do all my investigating independently, and then when somebody corroborates that, that's very nice, and I feel like, oh, I'm on the right track, and to me that's an aha moment. I always appreciate that. Or, you know, we come up with the same synopsis or the same view of the claim independently. That's probably my favorite part, I would think.
I've heard LNCs talk about that moment when they find the one word in the medical record that changes the whole complexion of the case.
Well, yes. And actually, I did have one of those in a perinatal claim, and the doctor, he was supposedly in the room at a certain time, and then anesthesia was so nice to say, no, he wasn't. He didn't get here until after that, and I looked at where he lived, and I thought, oh, he's stuck in traffic. That was an aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
And once I asked about, asked where the physician lived, that corroborated that impression that I had. And there wasn't really anything in the record. It was just putting things together, putting information together, and looking at it and thinking, oh, he was stuck in traffic. There's no way that he could have gotten to the hospital in less than 30 minutes from where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
Not in Los Angeles, California.
No. I have been in Los Angeles. I think we went from West Hollywood to the Santa Monica Beach, which is 11 miles, when my son lived out there, and it took an hour and a half to drive 11 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's an important frame of reference to keep in mind in terms of the geography.
Yes. Another one was with a correctional case that I had, and it's already been settled, so I can talk about it. This RN was being sanctioned by the Board of Registered Nursing from a letter that they had received that was on plain typing paper. In other words, it didn't have any letterhead on it. And if you have worked for the state or actually any corporation, people don't usually send out typewritten letters without their company letterhead. I mean, that's your branding.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I spoke with the attorney that I was working with on this case, and after reviewing the records, I told him that was not, and supposedly it was the DON of a state prison in Northern California, Sacramento State Prison, that they had supposedly written this letter about this nurse, and the board was sanctioning him, and the DA was prosecuting. And so I said, there's no way that a DON for a state prison here in California would not use letterhead.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would never have known that. And having worked in the prison system, those there are templates in the computer system that anybody can pull up. And it's just not very professional.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another aha moment. And the case ended up being dropped.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So that was good.
Well, clearly, Valerie, you've had a long career in working in legal nurse consulting and have achieved a high level of success being in a corporate position. What do you think are the personal qualities that most contributed to your success?
Well, I think that perseverance is one of them, and persistence, and that even though I wasn't sure exactly the path specifically that I was headed down, I knew generally that this is what I wanted to do, especially as I transitioned to a seasoned clinician, that I would just look for opportunities to continue to get out there and build my reputation. In fact, one of those was when we first met, and I spoke at, you and I both spoke at that first legal nurse conference in 2010. That was right before I started my current position. And when I saw you on the program, I thought, that's not too bad. And so I've just always tried to, I've always looked for what's next, what's down the road. You know, what am I going to do after I finish my undergrad degree? Well, I think I'm going to finish my master's and continue to just keep busy and move forward. And I think that that is key also.
I know that I get asked this question a lot from legal nurse consultants. They want to know how they can be successful, how they can do well in this field. What do you think are the skills that are critical to being a successful legal nurse consultant?
Well, again, I think it is perseverance and looking for opportunities that that will help you to grow and develop. For example, when we met, that was something that it was an inaugural conference, and I submitted a topic, and lo and behold, that topic was accepted, and I wrote a PowerPoint. I have a lot of experience in public speaking, and so that really wasn't an issue. There are other conferences that I would like to speak at eventually, maybe one day, but just always looking for what you can do to develop and hone your skills, report writing, getting, you know, example reports written. I would always have a portfolio that I would take with me when I interviewed with prospective clients, develop those small business strategies if you can. Now, that's where I thought I would start, and I would continue, but then my path took a different road. I did not realize that this healthcare system hired legal nurse consultants. There are not very many healthcare systems that do, but once I found out and I knew they were hiring, I certainly put in my application and continued to pursue that, and was able to gain employment that way. And so there are other avenues besides just being an independent consultant. I know there are other companies out there that do hire legal nurse consultants. And so I think that we hear that the independent consultant is the only way to go, and that's not necessarily true. I would encourage, especially as people become more aware of what legal nurse consultants can do in a corporate setting, I think that they will, I think that they're going to become more commonplace than they have been in the past.
And it's certainly a place that you have found as a home with a busy job, lots of responsibility, and the capability of taking what you know from your prior experiences as a nurse and legal nurse consultant and bring them into a different setting using skills involving analysis and communication and probably a fair degree of education and persuasion to make changes after recognizing that there are risks.
Yes, and actually, due to my correctional experience, that is one of the reasons I'm sure that I gained employment here, because we have a guarded care unit at one of our facilities, and due to the close proximity of six state prisons in this area, we have a tendency to treat a lot of inmates. And so because of that, of course, where there are people, there are you're going to have events and incidents, and along with that, people that want to assert claims. And so I do see quite a few of those, and I know that that was influential in gaining employment where I'm at. And so your background, surgery is another example. My surgical cases, there are some areas that I've had to learn more about, such as perinatal, but that has also provided growth and development. And so your background, your specialty background is always valuable, always valuable.
And how can people find out more about you, Valerie?
Well, I have a website, ValerieLaneLegalNurse.com, and you can contact me there. My email is vlane@valerielanelegalnurse.com. And so if you're interested in contacting me privately, please, I look forward to those contacts.
Well, thank you so much, Valerie, for being on the show. This has gone by really quickly, and I'm delighted that you've been able to share with us your expertise as a corporate legal nurse consultant. For our listeners, please stay tuned. We'll have another episode next week. We appreciate you being part of this show and listening to our sessions and learning. Thanks so much, and thanks for listening. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.